Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from People Magazine and the Cincinnati Enquirer. Question number one. Many celebrities from one field are also known for their musical talent. Which of the following celebrities is also known for their flute playing? Is that A, film director Steven Spielberg? Is it B, former President Bill Clinton? Is it C, comedian Tina Fey? Or is it D, actress Meryl Streep? So which one of these folks was also a flute player? And question number two, with everything now falling into place for this year's Super Bowl, who is the three-time Grammy winner performing at Super Bowl 60's halftime show? Is that A, Aerosmith, B, Bad Bunny, C, Maroon 5, or D, Taylor Swift? The upcoming Super Bowl 60 halftime performer, who is that anyway? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of January the 30th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1797 that composer Franz Schubert was born. Although he died at just age 31, Schubert composed over 600 songs and 9 symphonies. His Ave Maria composition is especially renowned. Franz Schubert, born today in 1797. Meanwhile, it was 62 years ago today, 1964, that the governor of Indiana declared that the song Louie Louie by the Kingsmen was pornographic. He requested that the state's radio stations not play this song. 1964, today. And in music research and technology with a country connection, we have this article titled, America's Most Downloaded Country Artist? AI. This is written by Nate Rao in Axios on the 14th of November, 2025. The most downloaded country song in America is written and sung not by a human, but by AI alone. Why it matters. This is Twilight Zone stuff, folks. For the number one and number three paid downloads, the artists, the music, the lyrics, the songs aren't by real people, but real people love them. The big picture. Artists of all types should be rattled that early, deeply flawed work-in-progress AI is already cranking out country hits and knocking humans down the music charts. The success of artists Breaking Rust, and Kane Walker pits AI technology against humans who earn their living as songwriters, artists, and music business professionals. Breaking Rust. A computer-generated outlaw blues country singer has the number one song on Billboard's country digital song sales chart with the single Walk My Walk. Kane Walker, an AI R&B singer, is number three on the same chart with Don't Tread on Me. Threat level. The AI chart invasion is ringing alarm bells in Nashville, Music City, one of the songwriting capitals of the world. Songwriting and music publishing are the cornerstones of the city's music industry. Countless singer-songwriters flocked to Nashville over the decades. By the numbers, Breaking Rust boasts 2.4 million monthly listeners on Spotify. Kane Walker has over 842,000. By comparison, ascending singer-songwriter Jackson Dean, whose single Heavens to Betsy is climbing the country radio charts, has 1.6 million monthly listeners. Reality check. Billboard's country sales chart only tracks paid downloads, a small piece of the music market today. It doesn't reflect streaming and radio airplay, which are factored into Billboard's more influential Hot Country Songs chart. Zoom out. In just the past few months, at least six AI or AI-assisted artists have debuted on various Billboard rankings, Billboard reports. That figure could be higher as it's become increasingly difficult to tell who or what is powered by AI and to what extent. Many tracks spanning every genre from gospel to rock to country arrive with anonymous or mysterious origins, sometimes with AI elements mixed into recordings of old-school hits, Billboard adds. Sign of the times. Billboard uses an AI tool to sniff for AI fingerprints. And there's a London producer who humanizes AI tracks. And in classical music, with research and technology connections, the title is I Had No Idea How to Play Double Bass, but I figured, how hard can it be? This is published in Google.com, downloaded on the 24th of August, 2025. While your enthusiasm for picking up the double bass is great, the reality is that it's a physically demanding instrument with a steep initial learning curve. However, with proper technique and consistent practice, it's a very rewarding journey. The instrument requires a high level of physical strength and stamina, particularly in the arms and hands. The heavy strings require considerable pressure to stop, and maintaining proper posture while holding the instrument is a challenge. Physical demands and technique. Unlike smaller string instruments, the double bass requires a very different approach to playing. A new technique. The fingering on the fretless fingerboard is not intuitive. The spacing of notes is much wider than on a bass guitar, requiring a specific hand posture, the 1-2-4 fingering method, and a great deal of precision to stay in tune. Building endurance. You'll need to build up strength and calluses in your fingers, and you may experience initial soreness in your back, arms, and wrists as you adjust. Bowing, arco versus plucking, pizzicato. If you plan on playing classical music, bowing is a complex technique that is separate skill in itself. Plucking for jazz or bluegrass can be easier to start, but still requires developing a specific sound and attack. Why a teacher is highly recommended. For the first year or two, working with a good teacher is crucial to avoid developing bad habits and potential injuries. Preventing injuries. Improper technique can lead to serious hand and tendon injuries that take a long time to heal. Correcting posture. A teacher can ensure you are holding the instrument correctly to avoid strain and pain. Finding intonation. They can provide valuable feedback on your pitch, which is one of the toughest parts of playing a fretless instrument. Ensuring proper setup. A teacher can also help you find a luthier to ensure your double bass is well adjusted, which makes a massive difference in playability. The learning curve. What to expect. The progress you make depends on your goals and how much time you can dedicate. Initial progress, you'll likely make fast progress initially, doing especially simple pizzicato lines. The sound and techniques are so different from electric bass that there's little overlap, though the tuning is the same. In the long haul, to become a proficient player, you'll need to really commit to regular daily practice for years. For the best results, aim for at least an hour a day. Physicality versus difficulty. Though it's a physically taxing instrument, many double basses don't consider it harder than any other instruments, just different. The stamina and technique you need to build are simply unique to the double bass. And in rock and pop music news, we have this article entitled, Farewell to Music on MTV. It's the end of an era, even if that era really finished a long time ago. MTV will cease broadcasting its music channels after this year. For generations of rock fans, this is a sad moment. This is written by Stephen Hill on the 20th of October, 2025, in Louder magazine. Last week, news broke that after nearly 40 years of broadcasting, MTV will be shutting down all of its music channels across Europe on New Year's Eve. While this isn't particularly surprising to hear, for those of a certain age, it's a sad moment. For those of us that can remember its heyday, MTV played a pivotal role in helping many of us discover the music that we went on to love. I didn't grow up with satellite television, so it was always during trips to my friends' houses that I would get the chance to experience MTV live. I still vividly recall a half-term break watching MTV for hours, where in between videos by the likes of Take That and Michael Jackson, they casually chucked in the promo for Alice in Chains again. It was a mind-blowing moment, my first experience and exposure to Alice in Chains, and on a midweek lunchtime, soon I was knocking on my mate's doors every evening and weekend, hoping we could just slump down and consume endless music videos. I got lucky again on a fair few occasions, a Soundgarden special on a Saturday morning, White Zombie closing the MTV Video Awards. Sure, I saw Peter Andre's Mysterious Girl video more times than I would have liked, but it was a small price to pay. In 1994, nearly half of my school year had crammed into the tiny living room in my mum's house to watch a tape copy of MTV's first broadcast of Nirvana's Unplugged concert. Soon, I was shoving VHS tapes into the hands of my friends with instructions to record every late-night alternative or rock-centric shows on that channel. The first two tapes I got back gave me moments of musical magic that have stayed with me to this very day. There were interviews, live footage, and a bunch of videos chosen by the artist. Already amazing. I was wondering what happened to them. As the years went on, the tapes kept coming, and MTV, along with my tastes, changed. The alternative-specific MTV 2 was launched, and rock videos on music TV were easier to come by than ever. It was a golden age. It's one that's long gone now, though. Perhaps that's why the decision to axe the channels doesn't feel shocking in 2025. Young people are still discovering rock and metal, but they're now finding it on TikTok. It's a different world. Not better, not worse, just different. Still, when my generation needed it, MTV provided. Not just for the pop fans, the hip-hop heads, and the ravers. It also gave us rockers plenty to be grateful for. And in local music news, we have this article titled, Banding Together. In 1942, 44 young musicians marched into history as members of the Navy's first all-black unit band. This is written by Brad Campbell in Our State magazine, February 2026. For years, Pam Carlson never knew that her father, Walter, had made history. As a trumpet player in the Navy's first all-black unit band, he was one of the first black men to enter the modern Navy at general rank. He didn't really talk about it, Carlson says, but when she began attending the B-1 band's reunions after her father's death, she was amazed. It was just so mind-blowing. I had such pride in what they did, and most people didn't know about them. Gregory Drain, who today directs the 315-member Penn State Marching Blue Band, had a similar epiphany. He was so inspired by the B-1 band story that he decided to attend the 70th anniversary of its formation in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. At the time, there were 8 surviving members. I instantly had 8 new grandfathers, Drain said. I was pulled in as if I was a family member, so much so that he decided to write a dissertation about the band for his doctoral degree. That dissertation, along with Alex Albright's The Forgotten First, B-1, and the integration of the modern Navy, illuminate a largely unsung chapter in North Carolina's history. The article skips down, ends with this. Attending B-1 reunions over the years, Pam Carlson became close with the last two surviving members, Calvin Morrow and Simeon Holloway. Their greatest fear was that when all of them died, their history would die, she says. The only way for it not to die is for us, their children and grandchildren, to keep it alive. Since their deaths, she and others have worked diligently to honor the members' legacy, including the placement of a historical marker on Franklin Street and making plans for a 2027 celebration to honor the band's 85th anniversary. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, many celebrities from one field are also known for their musical talent. Which of the following is known for their flute playing? Was that A, film director Steven Spielberg? B, former President Bill Clinton? Was it C, comedian Tina Fey? Or D, actress Meryl Streep? Correct answer? Answer C, comedian Tina Fey. As noted in an article by Stephanie Segui, published in a 9/26/25 issue of People magazine titled The Surprising Celebrity Musical Talents. Many of our Hollywood favorites boast more than one talent. And while it's not surprising for a singer to venture into acting or an actor to try their hand at directing, seeing a star pick up a saxophone will never not blow our mind. From Jason Kelsey's impressive sax skills to Tina Fey's flute playing to Steven Spielberg's love for the clarinet, these stars have proven to be instrumentally inclined. In fact, Spielberg has even used some of his clarinet to score some of his famous movies. And he's not the only director on this list to have done so. Check out these celebrities who have surprising musical talents. For example, there's Clint Eastwood. Like Spielberg, Clint Eastwood has utilized his musical talents in his movies as well. A piano player, Eastwood is also a composer and jazz aficionado, per NPR. He scored movies such as Million Dollar Baby, Flags of Our Fathers, Mystic River, and more. And, of course, Steve Martin. Only a genius as idiosyncratic as Steve Martin could have banjo playing on his resume. The beloved comedian actor has made many talk show appearances with his instrument and let it rip on the Steep Canyon Ranger song, so familiar. Then there's Bruce Willis, famous for forgetting and fighting bad guys on the big screen. Bruce Willis often showed his musical side by playing the harmonica during press appearances and with his band, The Accelerators. Back in 2022, wife Emma Henning, Willis shared a cool video of the actor jamming with Derek Richard Thomas in their home. And there's Meryl Streep. Because Meryl Streep couldn't be mediocre even if she tried, she learned to play violin for 1999's Music of the Heart, and in 8 weeks had picked up the craft enough to convince us she was a seasoned pro. Dustin Hoffman. If everything had gone to Dustin Hoffman's plan, the Wag the Dog actor would have been a classical pianist. However, one acting class in a Tennessee Williams play changed the trajectory of his artistic endeavors, leading him to be a 2-time Oscar winner. And how about Samuel L. Jackson? Was most known for cheerleading during his years at Morehouse, but he had band experience, too. The learned and famed actor played the French horn and trumpet in his school's orchestra between the 5th and 12th grades. And actor Ryan Gosling. The fact that Ryan Gosling was a Disney kid lets us know the breadth of his talents. Sure, now we only see him as an actor, though that I'm just Ken performance at the Oscars took us back, but the La La Land star also sang and breakdanced back in the day, and he plays guitar. And there's also Bill Clinton. Does anyone else recall that specific moment in time in the 90s when you couldn't separate Bill Clinton from his saxophone? The 42nd President of the United States, who was then the governor of Arkansas, wowed the nation when he played the instrument on the Arsenio Hall Show back in 1992. And speaking of this saxophone, how about Jennifer Garner? Her skills are no secret. She loves to celebrate her teenage years in the marching band. But perhaps there's no other moment when she truly flexed than when she gave her pal Reese Witherspoon a musical tribute for her birthday last year, leaving us all feeling like our friends could do more. And Courtney Cox. Cat Remix? Courtney Cox picked up the piano during the pandemic back in 2020, and by February 2021, she was skilled enough to give us a rendition of the Friends theme song. And the answer to our second question, with everything now falling into place for this year's Super Bowl, who is the three-time Grammy winner performing at Super Bowl 60's halftime show? Is it A, Aerosmith, B, Bad Bunny, C, Maroon 5, or D, Taylor Swift? Correct answer? Answer B, Bad Bunny. As noted in a 10/31/25 article by Casey Sloan in the Cincinnati Enquirer, Super Bowl 60 will air on NBC at 6:30 p.m. from Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, on Sunday, February the 8th. The first time this stadium, which is typically the home of the San Francisco 49ers, hosted the Super Bowl was in 2016, when the Denver Broncos defeated the Carolina Panthers 24-10 in Peyton Manning's final NFL game. This time around, it will be the AFC champion New England Patriots taking on the NFL champion Seattle Seahawks. The three-time Grammy-winning Puerto Rican rapper Bad Bunny is heading the halftime show. "What I'm feeling goes beyond myself," Bad Bunny said. "This is for my people, my culture, and our history." Bad Bunny became the first non-English American artist to be Spotify's most streamed artist of the year for 3 years in a row, and his 2020 album, El Último Tour del Mundo, became the first all-Spanish language album to land at the top of Billboard 200. So let's close out today's program with that Super Bowl halftime performer. Here's Bad Bunny's Me Fue de Vacaciones. I went on vacation.
Me fui de vacaciones con mucha cerveza y canciones. Un shot por la buena amistad y por las bendiciones. Y si el día se pone feo, tú me lo haces bonito. Ya no pido más deseo, tengo todo lo que necesito.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.
La vuelta con Sunset con Gaps. Lo que traigo es vibra linda, no quiero frontear. Pa' la baby yo después saco un disco de trap. No me busques que no me va a encontrar. No me va a encontrar. No, no. Me fui de vacaciones con mucha cerveza. Un shot por la buena amistad y por las bendiciones.